Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
A happy Wednesday to everyone out there on Sports360AZ.com. I'm your host today, Devin Henry, taking over for Brad Sesmat. No, in fact, I'm not Brad Sesmat. Not today, but tomorrow I will be. Or actually, Brad will be here. I'll be over there somewhere. But nonetheless, guys, glad to have you here on the Brad Sesmat Show. We stream just about every day here on Sports360AZ.com. Going over some of the big headlines here in the world of Arizona sports. And we got a boatload for you guys today going through the world of Arizona sports. As usual, since I'm on here, I'll go over some motorsports and talk about the craziest, maybe the stupidest. Nah, they're not stupid. They're just wild, crazy kind of people in arguably the most dangerous organized sport in the world. No, it's not football. No, I'm not going to say NASCAR, guys. Calm down. We'll get there when we get there, though. But, man, I tell you what. Always happy to wake up to rain. What I'm not happy to wake up to, though, is just when the ground is wet and the rain is already gone, for crying out loud. It's like, you know, I'm like, can you just please rain when, like, I can actually see it rain? We live in Arizona. It doesn't happen very much. I want to see it when it happens. But with that being said, I can't really complain too much because it was pouring yesterday, which was awesome. For those of you guys who aren't from Arizona, you just don't understand yet. It's like a national holiday when it rains in Phoenix. I'm telling you what. No snow this time. I mean, it's May. But nonetheless, I had a good time yesterday. I hope you guys had a good time as well, enjoying the rain best you can. I know when you're driving in the rain, it's no fun at all, really. But nonetheless, we're going to start off the show today talking so much baseball. Diamondbacks baseball, Arizona State baseball. They only have 3 series left to go in 2019, and not to mention the fact that they just swept the U of A Wildcats for the first time in 10 years. That happened last night. We're also going to talk. We are only about 6 days from the NBA draft lottery. What are the Phoenix Suns going to do? I'm not quite as concerned about that. We're going to talk a little bit more about the future of the Suns and also all the rumors circulating. D'Angelo Russell and Kevin Durant are coming to the Phoenix Suns, says, you know, random people on Twitter. We'll talk more in depth about that and what may or may not actually happen. And then something that I'm really kind of excited about that came out yesterday is Arizona State hockey, after a phenomenal third season in NCAA, they will be playing games in China next year. I'm going to talk a little bit about that as well, and like I mentioned, the motorsports. That's your rundown. It's brought to you, as always, by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Guys, do that with life insurance. You don't have to have everything figured out. That's kind of what they're there for, is figuring things out for hopefully many, 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 many years down the road, hopefully. But nonetheless, you can start figuring all that out with our buddies at Sagicor and Sagicor Now. Call them now. Protect what matters most with life insurance. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. So as my chair continues to sink for some reason, kind of weird, we're going to talk about something that's not sinking at all. It's actually on the rise. The Arizona Diamondbacks are 20-16. Yeah, okay, that's not World Series-based kind of record numbers or anything, but it's definitely, I don't think, what anyone was really expecting. When you lose guys like J.D. Martinez and Paul Goldschmidt in back-to-back years, not to mention the pitching staff on this team has been a large question mark for the past few years, quite frankly. I don't think that a 20-16 start is what you expect. I think you expect to be more like the Rockies or the Giants in the NL West at 16-19 or 15-20 even. Instead, the Arizona Diamondbacks are just 2.5 games out of the NL West lead. And then if you look at the wild card, which will be more likely because everyone thinks the Dodgers will still be pretty hot come year end, the D-backs are technically just 1 game out of the wild card spot. Okay, take a step back. We have 100 how many more games to go this year? I understand that. Looking at the Arizona Diamondbacks, though, this isn't really what I think people were expecting to see. Not only the D-backs winning games, but going on hot streaks. Okay, yeah, you just lost 12-1 and then 6-3 against Tampa Bay, but they've turned out to be the best team in the MLB currently when you look at just wins and losses numbers, which is another one of those flips that you wouldn't really think about when the season came to be. But so far, the Arizona Diamondbacks have done what they've needed to do, quite frankly. They have taken down the Padres in multiple games. They took 2 out of 3 against the Colorado Rockies. They're scoring runs in that Rockies series. They scored 26 runs over the course of 3 games. Yeah, of course, the Rockies also scored 19. That's been kind of the one problem so far. When you lose 12-1 against Tampa Bay, yeah, they're Tampa Bay, but you also gave up 12 runs. Once again, though, the pitching staff, in my mind, has been doing better than I think had been anticipated up before that anyway. And looking at the batting, yeah, you only got, what is it, 3-4 guys batting over 300. Alex Avila is batting .333 to lead your team. But everyone's also being very consistent. You look at everyone above 250, not counting, you know, pitchers who have only been up to bat a couple of times. You got, what, 10 guys batting over 250? And when you have a 9-man batting order, which I'm sure every team does usually, that's not a bad thing to have, and that's good growth for the future of your team. Then you have Zach Greinke, who's batting .316, 2 doubles, a triple, 4 runs batted in, and 2 home runs. I will never complain about a pitcher who rakes, especially when Zach Greinke, because I don't think you were expecting Zach Greinke to go out and hit 2 home runs in a single game anyway. Putting all this down on the table, a lot of people believe that this year was going to be a transition year, a year of change, a year of this is going to suck and hopefully in the next 3 years things are better kind of season. That hasn't been it at all. If that was what this season was or what this season was going to end up turning out to be, Zach Greinke would be gone by now. That's a big contract. Back when he signed that contract a few years ago, you're going, "Woo, this team better be pretty dang good. Otherwise, I don't know who's going to take over that contract." Right now, with how Zach Greinke is pitching and nonetheless hitting, I think you're perfectly fine with how that contract sits right now. You've went from a team who many people thought will be rebuilding in 2019 into a team who might be competing for the wild card 120, 30 games down the road. Of course, we still have the dog days of baseball coming up. I don't know. It's quite frankly still a couple months away. We're in May, maybe just a month away, but those dog days are just gonna get you in the butt most of the time. For any team, you're gonna get a good old whipping eventually. So, I don't know. I've been a real fan of what the Arizona Diamondbacks have been putting out. You look at how many games people like Greg Holland have been putting out. 12 games, an ERA of .75. Yon Lopez has been putting up some good numbers as well. His ERA is under 1 right now with double-digit games being in appearances. 8 saves as well for Holland. So I don't have any complaints with what's going on right now in the pitching staff. Yeah, things could get better, but this is a year where we think that, well, quite frankly, everything probably could get better when you lose the amount of talent that this team has had. And of course, I've been maybe not impressed because I think that that was the expectation going in, but the production and the leadership from David Peralta so far in 2019. I mean, just look on the field, he's batting over 300, not to mention he's kind of that voice in the clubhouse right now as well. And one last thing before we get moving on throughout the rest of the show, I do want to mention because Jordan Hamm did not mention the story that he put up on Sports 360 AZ. Last week, but Eduardo Escobar and his love of the Fogo Brazilian Steakhouse. There is actual evidence proving that the closer Escobar is to a Fogo Brazilian Steakhouse, the better he bats. Torey Lovello believes that a Fogo needs to go into Chase Field very soon. No. That's a very fun story that actually looks at the distance between this Brazilian Steakhouse and how good Escobar bats, and it's actually makes a lot of sense. Maybe that's not the word that I'm, or the phrase that I'm looking for there, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily imply, you know, causation, you know. You know that saying, but it's working, is it not? He was batting well at Coors Field, and that has a Fogo not too far away from it, so if I'm trying not to give away the entire story because Jordan Hamm did a great job on sports360az.com. But if you want to know more about that, go ahead and check it out. And then one more thing that Jordan Hamm did very recently with the Diamond in the Desert podcast. It's all about Diamondback baseball if you love Diamondback baseball. He talked to Blake Swihart, very recent addition to the Arizona Diamondbacks, just jacked a home run not too long ago for the D-backs. So good interview there and talking about where this D-back team is going in the future. We're going to take a break here on Sports360AZ.com, the Brad Sesmatt Show. When we come back, let's see here. Flip a coin. We'll talk a little bit about the Phoenix Suns, the draft lottery 6 days away, and also the NBA playoffs going on right now, what two very unsexy names might be in the NBA Finals, and why it might just be a good thing. I'm Devin Henry. Stick around, guys. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmatt Show on Sports360AZ.com. Devin Henry with you here today for the show on Wednesday. Brad will be back tomorrow on Thursday, and hopefully Goody at the Movies, my mom's favorite segment of the whole week, and that includes when I'm on here. So if that don't say something, I don't know what will. I'm looking at my phone in the break. Just put out an article this morning on the Phoenix Suns head coaching timeline under Robert Sarver that was out this morning on Sports360AZ.com, and a variety of things to talk about when it comes to the Phoenix Suns. Once again, for the third year in a row, the worst record in franchise history besides the inaugural season for the Phoenix Suns, in which they only won 16 games. This year, winning 19 games is the second worst record for now 3 years in a row. They hire Monty Williams, former Philadelphia 76ers assistant. Now with the draft lottery, the Suns are tied with the best chance to have the first overall pick once again in the NBA draft. I feel bad sometimes for the social media people for the Phoenix Suns, and to a degree, the Arizona Cardinals, too, because they recently had a bad season and had the number one overall pick as well. The number one overall pick is not something to celebrate. It is essentially saying, you guys were so bad, you need a lot of help. So what we're going to give you is whatever you want out of all college players in this sport. It's not something to celebrate. Now, of course, for a team like the Cardinals or the Suns that do, in fact, need help, it's a good thing. But sometimes the people who are so happy and just absolutely love the fact that the Suns or the Cardinals or whoever has it has the number one overall pick, you're at an 11, buddy. I need you at like a 3. That's where you should be feeling when you have the number one overall pick for a team. Now, there's been a lot of speculation as to off-season move for the Phoenix Suns. Obviously, they don't have a solid point guard. Obviously, Devin Booker, I mean, you can say what you want. When someone scores 70 points in a game, it can be a fluke for all I care, and then the next year he scores 59 on almost the same night. He's going to be a future star, future all-star, maybe not one of the best ever, but he's going to be a great in the NBA. He's 3 years into the league. DeAndre Ayton is going to be a good center. He has the potential to be. We saw him score last year. We saw him rebound better last year as well and develop through year number one. There's two very prime youngsters on this team, not to mention plenty of other youth on this squad that's going to have the ability to grow up and be great. That's why I think that this coaching job from that perspective, from a team perspective, is a great get, especially for someone like Monty Williams, who's going to step up and be a head coach again. So my only problem here is seeing that the Phoenix Suns, they're more than likely going to have a top three pick. We'll find out next Tuesday where exactly they're going to land, if it's Zion or Ja or whoever it's going to be on the Phoenix Suns. As I mentioned, the number one overall pick should not be celebrated, but it helps your team. DeAndre Ayton, number one overall pick. Devin Booker, what was he, 13? But still, holy cow. Look at what he's done for this squad. The draft is where you don't fill immediate holes. I don't care what sport you're talking about. The purpose of the draft, especially stuff like second round or late first round, you draft players to put in a farm system, if you will, because there isn't really any besides the MLB and the NHL. You're trying to get young talent to grow and be the future face of your franchise. Look at the Golden State Warriors, who drafted the majority of the All-Stars on their team. Yeah, Kevin Durant swooped in and made this team even better, but the Warriors won their first title mostly through their own draft picks and their offseason acquisitions. Right now, the prime offseason acquisition chain is that the Suns are going to pick up Kevin Durant and D'Angelo Russell. Let me explain why. Let's start with D'Angelo Russell, arguably the more possible pick out of the two. D'Angelo Russell is a restricted free agent after refinding himself, basically, after being traded from the Lakers to the Nets, had a phenomenal season this year. And he was wearing a Devin Booker jersey. Or no, it was Devin Booker was wearing a D'Angelo Russell All-Star jersey. And they had a social media interaction. Then all of a sudden, D'Angelo Russell is tied to the hip with the Phoenix Suns. And the media asked him about that. And he's like, I don't get it. Why am I being connected to the Suns? And they're like, Devin Booker. He's like, yeah, he's like my bro. But it's like, come on. I don't necessarily see D'Angelo Russell coming to Phoenix. I think that, especially as a restricted free agent, he's happy with what's growing right now in Brooklyn. So that's a maybe, maybe not. Of course, it'd be phenomenal for the Suns to have a point guard who can run the floor like D'Angelo Russell. But I just want to touch on this Kevin Durant thing. The connection between Kevin Durant and Monty Williams feels almost so insignificant to me that there are so many articles out on the interweb saying, yes, this is what's going to bring Kevin Durant not to Los Angeles, not back to Golden State, not to some team in the East if Kyrie Irving leaves Boston. He's not going to go to Boston. He's going to pick the Phoenix Suns, who won 19 games last year, because Monty Williams is now the head coach of the Suns. I don't want to say we'll see, because I don't think we will, but don't hold your breath about it. Those are just the two rumors that I look at and I go, really? You really think that's a possibility there? But nonetheless, the Phoenix Suns have work to do. And you look at this coaching timeline that I put out there. Once you move past Mike D'Antoni, who was hired in 2003, Robert Sarver became the owner in 2004. Yeah, you had that awkward little dig in there with Terry Porter. Then you go back, and you get Alvin Gentry. He was there for a few years, but after the removal of Alvin Gentry, now the head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, this timeline goes from like, here's a coach, here's a coach, here's a coach, here's a coach, to boom, 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 boom. Year after year, here's another guy. It's after Alvin Gentry's gone, it's Lindsey Hunter for 4 months. Jeff Hornacek, yeah, he was there for a couple of years. Then Earl Watson, Deidreano, Igor, now Monty Williams. Those five coaches, the five of them, five different coaches over the span of 5 years. That's insane. Especially when you realize that Jeff Hornacek was a coach from May 2013 to February 2016. That seems like a big gap of time, yet somehow there's four other coaches in that mix when you add in January 2013 forward. I talked with Jordan Hamm about this when the first revelations of Monty Williams becoming the Suns head coach came about. There's got to be an end game somewhere here. It seems like the Phoenix Suns, with the hiring of Earl Watson, Deidreano, and even Igor, they didn't have a path. They didn't know where in the world they were going. Even with Igor, they said he's going to lead a team of veterans. 2 weeks later, they're all gone. I mean, that's almost setting him up to fail and only win 19 games when you say, this is our plan, and 2 weeks in the season, he's gone. Heck, that's what happened with Earl Watson in his final year with this team. Hey, here's the plan. Okay, bye now. And I just hope that with this selection of Monty Williams to take over the helm of this team, there's a plan. You have the pieces. You know, 3 years ago, you really didn't have the pieces of a future star team. You do now with Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and potentially whoever you pick here. Yeah, you're not going to be in playoff contention next year. That's it. If you win more than 25, 30 games, that's a win. If the Suns can win 25, 30 games next year, that's a win. I know it sucks to say that. I know it sucks to hear that. But that's where Phoenix is right now. Where is that plan? Where is that endgame plan? We don't know. There's still no point guard on this team definitively. We're going to have to wait and see. Before I let this thing roll way too far over the rails with the Phoenix Suns, because we'll talk more about them next week with the draft lottery on Tuesday, I do want to talk about the NBA playoffs. Last night, watching the game, I'm watching the Portland game, Portland and Nuggets, and I believe it was Charles Barkley at halftime, throws out, as they always do on that TNT halftime show, here's what's going to happen, y'all. Bucks, Blazers, NBA Finals. Yeah, those are not the sexiest names you could have picked there, Charles. Of course, everyone wants to see the Warriors, and when I say everyone, you either love them or you hate them. People confuse the fact that popularity does not mean most liked. Popularity means the most talked about, the most known. If you love them or you hate them, that makes them more popular. People want to see the Warriors go to the NBA Finals. I think that there's this love with Kyrie Irving and the rebuilding of the Boston Celtics that people would love to see a Warriors-Celtics Finals. Fact is, how the playoffs look right now, that might not happen. Of course, Boston right now is in a 3-1 hole against Milwaukee. Houston and Golden State are going neck and neck right now, and they're split at 2 apiece. Now, Portland might not be going to the finals either because Denver just took a win against them last night. 3-2 now, but nonetheless, Denver has Kennedy Wilkerson is all happy. Our chairwoman of the board is all happy about that. I wouldn't be surprised one bit if the Denver Nuggets and the Milwaukee Bucks are this year's NBA Finals. Wouldn't be surprised at all. I mentioned this a couple months ago. Name two players on the Denver Nuggets right now. You can't, probably. That doesn't count Isaiah Thomas. He's not playing that much. Give me, you know, Nikola Jokic. You know, he got that one, maybe. Name someone else on that team. You don't have to have big names to make it to the NBA Finals. Now, yeah, the Warriors have kind of sumped that these past 5 years or so. Not to mention LeBron James and wherever he happens to be playing that year. Yeah, but still, if I would have told you before the playoffs or before the season started, Eastern and Western Conference Finals are going to be between the 1 seed and the 2 seed, you would go, well, that makes sense. That's how this is supposed to work. But then if I would have told you, by the way, that's Milwaukee and Toronto and Golden State and Denver, you would have went, you're 1-for-4, Devin. Good luck, though. That's how it looks right now. That's the 1-2. Toronto's up 3-2 on Philly. Milwaukee's up 3-1 on Boston. Golden State, Houston, it could be either one of them, the 1 or the 4. Denver, the 2 seed right now, is 1 win away. I just saw this tweet during the break. Who is the only city to have a team 1 win away from being in the conference finals in 2 different leagues right now? Denver. Colorado Avalanche, Denver Nuggets. 1 game, 1 win out of being in the conference finals of the NHL and NBA playoffs. This is a good thing for the NBA. As many people who are going to go, no, not watching it. There's no LeBron. There is no Warriors. There's no James Harden. I'm not going to watch. This is a good finals, I think. I'm a fan of good basketball. That's why I'm falling in love with this Golden State-Houston series. Not because of the antics from, you know, all the players screwing around and stuff. No, but it's fun basketball to watch. Same thing why I'm watching Portland and Denver right now. That's a good series to watch. It's kind of why I'm not watching Toronto-Philly, because they haven't had very good games yet. But the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's going to be one of the faces of the NBA here, if he isn't already, one of the top faces here in the next 2-3 years. Having the ability to watch him play for a championship this year, I think is a good thing for the NBA. He's some tall dude from Greek playing on a no-name team with no-name players, but somehow has the number 1 seed in the East. I think it's a good thing if Milwaukee is in the NBA Finals. The Denver Nuggets are built to last. Nikola Jokic has been phenomenal. I think that those are good names to have in the NBA Finals this year, because you're going to learn about them. There are going to be new faces to the NBA that you're going to hear about these next few years. So yeah, it's not the most sexy picks in the world to say Milwaukee and Denver in the NBA Finals, but dang it, I think it's probably good for the NBA. As much as the advertisings and ratings probably won't say. We're going to take one more break here, and on the other side, we're going to be talking some Arizona State sports. Yeah, baseball and hockey coming up on the other side here on the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Devin Henry. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show on Sport360AZ.com. Hunter Bishop of the Arizona State Sun Devils currently leads the NCAA with 21 home runs. Spencer Torkelson, Mr. Home Run, if you will, is behind him with 17. Who would have thought that Spencer Torkelson would only have 17 home runs here in his second year playing baseball in the NCAA? But nonetheless, Arizona State baseball not only took down the number one UCLA Bruins 8-7 on Sunday, but then on a midweek game on Tuesday in Tucson, swept U of A for the first time since 2009 with a 10-7 win. Yeah, not the prettiest last three games. Gave up 7, gave up 7, gave up 18 on Saturday. This team is now in the double-digit loss column after what was looking could have been an undefeated non-conference schedule. Now they're only 34-12. Boo flippin' who. No, this team, I mean, it's really an insane turnaround when you think about it, since they're only 14-10 in the Pac-12 anyway, but that's kind of where I talked earlier this year after that series against Xavier and that win against New Mexico State. Okay, you're going into conference play now. Well, you sweep Washington State, 2-3 against Oregon, sweep Arizona. It was looking pretty dang good. 10 losses this year. That ain't bad, guys. This team has really flipped a switch this year where I was kind of concerned, can this team go all year and go out and win ball games? The pitching staff last year and even the year before that was very questionable. When someone was in relief, you went, can this guy either get out of the pickle that he's in right now or stay on the mound until this ball game is over? You really weren't sure, especially if the starter had a good first, say, five innings, and then 6 and 7 wasn't so good and gets pulled. You're wondering, can this relief pitcher go three or four innings? You just never knew any game. You never knew that. Now look at how things have changed. Yeah, they're still giving up quite a bit of runs, but all the guys with a below 4 ERA, including Sam Romero, Alec Marsh, and Chaz Montoya, all guys who were here last year. Montoya has 23 dang appearances, all in relief, including two saves, and he's at 2.25 ERA. These guys have kind of come back to a point where you're not as worried about the pitching staff. Now, of course, in Pac-12 play, when you're giving up so many runs, that's going to end up coming back and probably biting you pretty dang hard. Nonetheless, three series to go. And this is, when these guys were first winning, I looked at the bottom of the schedule and I said, if Arizona State is still in contention before that last game against Arizona, this can be a team that goes into regionals comfortably. Three games at Nebraska, three games at Cal, end the year at home, three games against Stanford. Can they go 9-0, or I guess it'd be 11-0 in their last 11 games with their last two wins? Look at what they did earlier this year. I absolutely think so. Will they? I mean, come on, guys. It's baseball. Anyone can win on any given day, it seems like. Hunter Bishop leads the Pac-12 right now in home runs. 21 dingers. Spencer Torkelson is batting almost 350. There are five players on this team batting over 330. That includes Bishop at a 357. They're making contact on the ball. They're striking guys out. They're hitting dingers. Surprise, surprise. When this team comes together, it looks really, really good. When this team can't capitalize on what they're given in such games, including that original UCLA game when they only lost by one, it looks even more nasty than it really is, especially when you go out and lose the next night 18-3. Is this a team that's going to go and make big noise in super regionals? No, probably not. Is this a team that is building towards the future because they're going to be returning most of their sluggers? Abso-flippin-lutely. I'm really excited to keep watching ASU baseball as the season comes to a close. Can they make noise in regionals? Because I think that this is a team, you got to take care of business against Nebraska at the very least. Keep that top 25 ranking in every single poll. And I think you're into the postseason this year for Arizona State baseball, which was a question last year. It was kind of a, yeah, maybe they'll get there in that last series against Cal and they didn't. This year, I think that it's more than possible for this team to make noise in super regionals. And you look at this team, it's built to last, guys. There's a lot of good players that are still on this team who are still extremely young. And that includes Hunter Bishop is coming back next year. Spencer Torkelson is just a sophomore. Trevor Hauer is just a sophomore. Aliko Williams, who has stepped up big time this year, he's just a sophomore. Gage Workman, he's just a sophomore. The top five guys are just sophomores and one junior. And batting-wise, I should mention, because there's other guys who deserve a lot of respect as well, if they don't go out for the MLB draft. Lyle Lynn, who's a junior, yeah, he might be going to the MLB draft this year. But you look at those top six guys, those are all potential returners batting 300+. That's a batting order that I would put money behind that this team in the future is built to last. One other thing that I want to talk about on Arizona State sports. We had Andrew Bell, our hockey intern, if you will. Congrats, he just graduated yesterday. He just walked at I almost said convention, at the ASU Walter Cronkite ceremony yesterday, and then, of course, graduated with everyone as well at ASU. So congrats to our intern, Andrew. But I had him on the show about a month ago talking about Arizona State hockey, a team that's only been in the NCAA for 3 years and made it into the tournament. And it's not like basketball where there's 64 teams. There were 16. And they were one of those top 16 teams to be in a tournament after only 3 years. Now they're doing something even bigger in my mind. They're going to be playing games in China next year for the NCAA. It's one thing for this Arizona State team to make national headlines. It's a bigger thing for this team who has only been in the NCAA for 3 years in a city where there is no ice or snow anyway to be going out and playing hockey in China and will probably be winning hockey games. Taking tours in Shanghai. This is a spot where I don't even think head coach Greg Powers could have thought that this team could have been at when they were winning club championships. That, hey, in 3 years, you're going to be in the tournament. He'll go, yeah, okay. And you're gonna, and then you're going to play games in China. Excuse me? I think that's probably what his reaction would have ended up being like, that this ASU hockey team is going to go play hockey games in China this offseason. I think that this is great for the school. I think it's great for the sport of hockey also, but more so the West Side hockey. It's going to start growing here. There's essentially two teams in contention in NCAA hockey on the West Side of the United States of America. There's Denver, phenomenal school, one of the best schools in the nation year in and year out. If you're not good enough to play for Denver, where do you go next? Arizona State. Because there's no teams in contention in California. If you want to play NCAA hockey right now at a high level and stay on the West Coast and you're not quite good enough to play for Denver, it's right here at Arizona State. The recruiting is going to continue going up. And even going to Shanghai is going to be a good part of that growth. So a lot of good things going on at Arizona State right now for athletics, football, basketball, hockey are all on the rise, and baseball. The four major sports. Who would have thought 2 years ago we'd be saying the four major sports in America are going to be getting really, really big at Arizona State University? Great thing for Ray Anderson and the Arizona State Sun Devils. We'll take one more break on the other side. I'll talk a little bit about NASCAR because an Arizona name that you probably don't know is on the verge of winning his first ever cup race. And not to mention, we're going to talk about the most insane athletes in the world and quite arguably the most dangerous sport in the world. That's coming up next, and no, I'm not saying NASCAR. It's something much more fun than that. Stick around, guys. So I'm a big motorsports guy. Y'all know that, and I told you we're going to talk about arguably the most dangerous and insane athletes in the world here. And when people say that football is the most dangerous sport, the four major sports, I'm like, yeah, cool, but that's nothing compared to what I'm about to talk about. No, I'm not going to say NASCAR is the wildest, most intense sport. Now, we don't need to have the conversation about our NASCAR drivers, athletes, because I'm right. They are. There's no argument there. You just don't. If you're going to argue that, you just don't understand and you don't care. So we're just going to pass that up. But they are athletes, and what they do is very, very, I don't want to say painful, but it's intense on the human body. You're basically being an astronaut for 3 hours. That's what being a NASCAR driver is. But when people talk about how intense and brutal and painful the NFL is, I'm like, well, yeah. And of course, with the concussion issue right now, there's chances that moving forward in these guys' lives, their lives are changed because of head injuries. But I'm a big supercross and motocross guy as well. I was converted by my brother to enjoy this stuff, and now I'm really into it. And this past weekend, they held the championships at Las Vegas, and There was one kid in particular. He's 19 years old, guys, and 2 weeks ago he suffered a torn ACL, a legitimate 100% torn ACL, including injuries to the MCL and even a little bit of a bruise to the top of the bone, and not to mention his meniscus. If you tear your ACL completely, you are out for a year in the NFL. That's guaranteed. This 19-year-old fighting for a championship on the national level on national television, came back the very next week to try to handle this multi-hundred. If you've ever been on a dirt bike, they're heavy. These guys whip these things in the around in the sky like they're nothing. This kid, 19-year-old, with a completely torn ACL, goes out and rides and races as hard as he possibly can. There's nothing there protecting his leg. He can't wear a brace either because he has to extend his leg in the corners. That's not uncommon. People don't understand. Dirt bike riders with torn ACLs racing, that's not uncommon. And then he went out, hit the face of a jump with his bike really hard, and probably about took a chunk out of his leg. And he wanted to keep racing. These guys are insane. And let me just go through the last race of the Supercross season was last week. Let me list you off the injuries. Defending champion Jason Anderson. What did he have wrong? Well, he lacerated his liver, collapsed a lung, and injured his bike while also breaking ribs at practice. He'll be back in a couple weeks for outdoors. Justin Barcia injured a shoulder. He'll be back in a couple weeks. Benny Blass completely tore his ACL before the season. He'll be back in a few weeks. Who else do we got on here? Tyler Entignap broke his sacrum and his L5 vertebrae. He's had surgery. He'll probably be back in time by the end of outdoors. Vince Friese suffered an ACL in Arlington. Weston Pike during a race in Paris for Supercross just about destroyed his entire face. All the bones in his face got ran over. He's hoping to race by the end of the year again. Who else we got here? Chad Reed, he's in his late 30s. What did he break? 8 broken ribs, a broken scapula, collapsed lung. He was hoping to race this Saturday. He broke all that like a month ago, guys, and he wanted to come back and race. He'll probably be back for outdoors here in a few weeks. Malcolm Stewart, he completely broke his femur back in January. He's hoping to race in June. Dean Wilson suffered a crash in Denver a few weeks ago, shoulder injury and kidney contusion. He'll be back in 2 weeks. I just listed you off career-ending injuries in the 4 major sports. And every single one of them has plans to race here in the next 2 months again on a dirt bike. These guys are absolutely insane. And that's just the 450 guys. That's just the top tier. I'm not even going through what I guess you could call the AAA guys and all the injuries that those guys had. And the biggest thing is that these aren't the first injuries for these guys. This isn't unusual. This is very normal to have this many guys out with this severe of injuries, guys. Absolutely absurd what these guys do. If you want to go watch a dangerous sport with guys putting everything on the line every single minute, go out and watch some Supercross and Motocross on NBCSN this year. These guys are absolutely insane monsters. That's what they are. One of the guys, he's from Phoenix, Arizona, Chris Blos. They call him a zombie. That just came from last week because he went down. He was down for several minutes. They had the crew out there, as the race is going on, by the way, to pick him up and take him somewhere to get examined, and he just wanted to get back on the bike and start racing again. It's absolutely insane. That's being Chris Blos. He's one of the more aged guys out there. I think he had like a broken rectum or something like that, which is what caused him to not race the end of the race in Vegas. If you guys want to go and see some insane athletes, Supercross and Motocross is the way to go. You want to watch these guys put everything on the line for hours upon hours. One last thing that I do want to talk about is a little bit on NASCAR. Hold on. Here's what Chris Blos had to do. A fractured radius. The dude fractured his radius trying to get back on a dirt bike. They're insane. I do want to talk about NASCAR real quick for a Tucson, Arizona native, Alex Bowman. Back-to-back second place finishes this past week coming at Dover, a race that almost looked like he was going to win out in Delaware. So, guys, keep a lookout for Alex Bowman, the Tucson native, 25 years old. He's on the verge of winning his first career NASCAR race. And NASCAR is very different than most other sports in like 2 bazillion different ways or so. Kyle Busch, you probably have heard of him before because he's a little bit outlandish in what he says. He goes out, he expresses his opinion. He's someone who was very, very loud in many, many different ways. NASCAR right now has a new package in all their cars, essentially changing the aerodynamics and changing the speeds and the power of the engine. So they're trying something new at some of these shorter tracks and some of the more intermediate tracks to give more speed, give more drafting, but also make it more safe. After the race, not only did Kyle Busch, but one of the car owners, essentially think of it as a Robert Sarver or I don't know, think of any owner. Think of Robert Kraft coming out after a game and saying, what the NFL is doing is bad and it doesn't work and we need to change things. Cussing out to the media about how bad this rule change is. That's exactly what Kyle Busch and the owner of Levine Family Racing Team did after the Dover race. And while a lot of people are like, well, that's like a $10,000 fine right there in any other sport, NASCAR goes, no, you're fine. No fine for completely blasting to the media and to the fans about how bad NASCAR's rule change is. That's something so different about NASCAR, where to the point when you, if an NBA player says anything negative about the officiating in a post-game press conference, that's $10,000 right there. Now, of course, they wipe their butts with that money. I mean, come on, that's nothing to them. But nonetheless, NASCAR drivers can say just about whatever they want as long as they're being honest, I guess. If that's how Kyle Busch feels, that's how Kyle Busch feels. With that being said, the reason why NASCAR is going through all these changes and all this testing right now is because they're going to have their next generation of race cars. Yeah, they still call them stock cars. I don't know why. There's nothing stock about them, and they're very hard to relate with. You know, the Chevy Camaro out on the NASCAR track don't look like your Chevy Camaro that you're going to drive by here in North Scottsdale. But nonetheless, what NASCAR is doing right now is trying out different things to figure out what is going to work in this Gen 7 car. You could call this entire year just a test year. You don't get that in the NBA where they say, hey, this year we're going to move the shot clock to 20 seconds and the three-point line is going to be moved back 2 feet. It might not work and we'll change it back next year. We'll just change it again to something else next year. You don't get that in other sports. NASCAR wants to try something new for these new cars that they're currently building. So, well, at the end of the year, people aren't going to be happy. Kyle Busch had the same thing to say when the Car of Tomorrow came out, these other generations of race cars, and he won the very first race that these race cars were introduced at. And in victory lane, he said, these cars suck. I hate them. I don't want to drive them again. He won the race, and he hated the race car. And that's what NASCAR is, though. They're continuing trying to innovate what these cars can do. My only concern with this is what are the small teams going to be able to do when there's a new NASCAR out? Because these cars cost millions of dollars, which is why sponsorship is so important. NASCAR will not survive without small teams being a part of the growth of NASCAR. With the continuous changes to the cars, that's just not sustainable for some of these smaller teams. That's my biggest concern right now with what NASCAR is doing with changing up how they're operating these cars and building these cars. So a little bit there on the motorsports front. We're still months away from the semifinals here in Phoenix, but guys, keep that name Alex Bowman in your head, because come November, if he is in the hunt to be a part of the NASCAR championship, we could be watching the first ever Arizona-born driver to go out and win a NASCAR race on the top level of the series. A lot of fun going on here. Plenty of good things to talk about here on the Brad Sesmat Show. Big thank you to Candy Wilkerson, our chairwoman of the board. And then, of course, Brad Sesmat will be back tomorrow for plenty more. I'm Devin Henry. That will do it here for the Brad Sesmat Show. This will replay all day long, and then not to mention plenty more coming up tomorrow with Brad Sesmat. I'm Devin Henry. Have a phenomenal rest of your Wednesday, everyone.